I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Yeah, welcome to this edition of the Trans-Europe Express podcast with me, Danny Kelly. Mark Langdon's also very much in the house. It's all the usual features plus some new ones as well. We're talking to you about all the football across the continent. Mark will be answering your questions in our Q&A section. More about that a little bit later. And I'll be telling you about the team with the longest trip any club football match involves in the world. All of that, plus music and polls, the usual furniture. Welcome to the Trans-Europe Express podcast.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, Danny Kelly's Trans-Europe Express on TalkSport.
Yeah, thanks very much, Andy and the boys there, for the final word. And welcome to two jam-packed hours of Trans-Europe Express here on TalkSport. Me, Danny Kelly, and my wingman today, the ever-reliable and, of course, last week I described Mark Cotty's brain as big as our solar system. Well, Mark Langdon's football brain is as big as a galaxy. And I don't mean one of those tiny little chocolate bars you now get out of a vending machine upstairs here at TalkSport for your pound, but a proper galaxy. And during the course of the next 2 hours, we'll be reviewing all this weekend's action across the continent, have a European football cult hero for you, musical homework, songs about travelling, going, moving. I'll explain about that in a little while. Simon Calder will give us his latest World Cup travel report. There's got a poll for you and a new feature, very simple, at the end of the show, the Trans-Europe Express Q&A. Mark Langdon will answer any question, I mean any question, about European or world football, however small, whether you want to talk about the badge some club's got on their shirt or a player that you think is going to set the World Cup afire, whatever it is, get your calls in now to 08717223344. That's 08717223344, and we'll put you on the air. We'll call you back, of course, so it's a free call. Or you can tweet us at TalkSport, or you can text us 81089. Text will cost you 50 pence. But get your questions in for a new feature here on what was already award-winning and the most jam-packed show on radio. It's even more stuff now. Think about a Dundee cake with a turkey stuffed inside it. That's where we're going here on Trans-Europe Express. I realise that metaphor was quite frightening there, but not least because if anyone still eat Dundee cake, it used to be the densest cake you could buy. Oh, we'll talk about cakes later. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Danny. You're making me hungry. Galaxy bar.
Do you remember Dundee cake? Oh, they probably still do have it, don't they?
No. I'm...
It's a thick brick of a fruit cake with, I think, almonds around the very edges of the lip of it to give it some kind of other flavour.
No, the turkey in the galaxy bar is doing it more for me, actually.
Okay, good. Well, you'll be a very, very happy man. We can't talk about domestic football. But both Mark and I support a certain North London club, so there's a certain jollity, a certain spring in our step here on Trans-Europe Express.
And it's not Arsenal, Danny, we should...
they won as well, to be fair to them. So all happy in our household. So the headline first, we're going to Italy. Big weekend for the race for the title. And the headline is, who's Sarri now?
Yes, Napoli. We've been speaking in recent weeks about how they've been playing catch-up in terms of, you know, always playing after Juventus? Could they take advantage? Sarri wasn't happy with the ordering.
It's the first week in many that they have played before Juventus.
Certainly, it's not happened too often. It's not happened often enough as far as Sarri, the Napoli coach, is concerned. But Napoli couldn't take advantage. Far from it. They were held to a 1-1 draw by Sassuolo. And I think sort of in the way that football works, that the guy that could well have ruined Napoli's Scudetto bid may well have been playing for Napoli. Politano, the Sassuolo forward, was one of those that Napoli tried to buy to boost their squad going into the second half of the season. All kinds of rumours as to why it didn't go through. Napoli suggesting that Juventus, who came in quite late on into the party, pushed the price up to ridiculous levels, then messed around with the player.
So neither club got him.
Yeah, so, I mean, and Juventus obviously didn't want him anyway because they've got a big enough squad. Talk that they sabotaged Napoli's bid for Politano, who, like I say, got the opening goal. Napoli equalised for an own goal. Put on a bit of pressure late on. Milik hit the bar, the Polish forward that's been an injury hit so far this season. But it wasn't really the Napoli performance that we've come to expect over the last couple of years under Sarri. And you do wonder whether it was the pressure of trying to get back in front.
Well, you know, you set it out to, when we were doing our award-winning preparation for the award-winning show. You said, the thing about Juventus is, like all these super teams that dominate these leagues, that they, because they keep winning, Napoli, good to very good team though they are, it's just incredible.
It's just relentless.
To keep winning.
Yeah, it's very difficult just to keep winning. And even, you know, Sarri is talking about breaking the points record that Napoli have got. And I think that would be a fair achievement if they can get anything like 90 points this season. But it may not be enough to win the league. And Juventus just hammered home a potential knockout blow, really, when they beat Milan 3-1 in the later game.
But they were by no means the 3-1 best team in that game, were they?
No, they were poor, Juventus. They took the lead early through Dybala, but they had to change their formation in the first half because it was all Milan. They equalised through Bonucci, who'd been given a lot of stick by the Juve crowd. He wasn't happy. He said before the game, if he scored, he wouldn't celebrate. He did celebrate because they'd booed him. And at that stage, Milan looked like the more likely winners. They were brave in possession, that they pressed Juventus high, they kept nicking the ball. Juve were really struggling. Calhanoglu hit the bar with a thunderous effort, and then Calhanoglu give the ball away in midfield. Khedira picked it up, cross for Cuadrado, 2-1. Khedira makes it 3-1. And that basically sums up Juventus in the last couple of years.
Although, absolutely right, but you could say that right at this moment, as the winter turns to spring, things are falling into place very slightly for Juventus. Cuadrado, you mentioned, scored there, but he's been out for a long time. He's come back. Dybala gets a goal after being struggling to get these things. They're getting themselves, you know, in the right place, as always, for the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
They are. I mean, I would still like to see them playing better. People say, oh, it's a sign of a good team to win when you're not playing well. I think there's a certain amount
up
of...
to a point, yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of luck that also, you know, comes into that because, like I say, Calhanoglu's effort is a couple of inches lower. Milan go 2-1 up. Gattuso is absolutely furious with Calhanoglu for giving the ball away in midfield. Substituted him immediately after the goal. It kind of, like I say, it's frustrating, I think, for football fans that don't support Juventus, that want to see a title race, that Napoli can play, you know, not so great and draw. Juventus play probably even worse and yet win. And that, you know, there's something to be said for championship winning teams that continue to do that.
Roma, a bit behind those two teams, but a long way behind. They dropped a point at Bologna. Points at Bologna, rather.
A 1-1 draw away to Bologna. Dzeko came off the bench, of course, after the international break, just before the Champions League. Maybe Roma feel like they've got enough of a buffer on those around them. I think it's a mistake not to have played their absolute strongest team because, you know, Lazio are only 3 points behind. Inter are in the hunt. Even Milan can get themselves back into it. So maybe that could be a costly decision come
absolutely.
The end of the season.
Absolutely, and those points they dropped.
But you do have to juggle, you know, you've got Barcelona in midweek, so you do want your best players fit and ready to go.
Yeah, I totally get that. But, of course, that the decision, the 2 points dropped, was then exacerbated by Inter winning 3-0 against Verona, 2 for Icardi there, and Lazio smacking, and I mean, it's no big deal that they've got 6 against Benevento. At least Benevento got 2 in return. Talk to me about the game between Fiorentina and Crotone. No big deal there, except for the familiar names of the goal scorers.
Well, yeah, particularly seeing as this week on BT Sport, they've been celebrating Gazzetta Italia and all that brought to English football fans back in the day. The scorers for Fiorentina in that 2-0 victory, Simeone and Chiesa, two players that have got obviously famous fathers that graced the Italian league back in the day. But like I say, this was the sons of.
Yeah, but I mean, this is clearly something that we've seen more and more and more of in football, isn't it? That whatever DNA, whatever twitch fibres you need to play football, it's getting passed down generation by generation by generation. I mean, it's...
opportunity though, Dan. I mean, how much you do? It does make you wonder, doesn't it? To sort of how much
talent gets wasted.
And you know how far you can get on a name, for instance. Now, Chiesa, I think, could be very special. Definitely looks like one of Italy's brightest young players. As far as Simeone goes, a bit more of a lump up front, an awkward player. And certainly, I don't, you know, he's made, rightfully made his way up to the professional game. Not sure how much higher he can go. Chiesa definitely can.
I mean, I just, this came home to me, and this is rather boring for everybody else. Nearly 20 years ago, when a certain North London team won the League Cup against Leicester, that Spurs team had 4 players in it, 4, count them, whose fathers had been, you know, proper full-time professional players. What's interesting is how the sons are often good professionals, but Jordi Cruyff is no Johan Cruyff. Discuss. Frank Lampard may be the exception that proves all rules.
Oh, of course.
Better than his dad. Italians love training camps and retreats when things don't go well.
Yeah, so you know things are going badly when you're in retreat. and it's in Sampdoria at the moment, a team that we praise.
It's the Italian version of the naughty step, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, this... a team that we praised up. They beat Juventus, if you remember, back in November. Lost to Chievo 2-1. They were winning in that game. So that they've been sent to retreat.
Yeah, they lost 4 out of 5, and in Italy, that just, unless you're poor old Benevento, that just don't work, does it?
No, I mean, I suppose really they are where they should be in 8th spot, but it's just the fact that, of course, all these defeats have come at once.
Yeah. Let's talk about the vacancy with the Italian manager. We will, as we go through the big leagues, talk a little bit about the national sides. We've seen them all play in the last few days, and we know a little bit more about how they're heading towards the World Cup, or in Italy's case, not heading towards the World Cup. And Costa Curta, who I think is in charge of Italian football, has set a date for the appointment of a new manager.
May the 20th, they want to have someone in place. Now, you could say that's convenient. End of
the Premier League season.
Antonio Conte could well be available. I think it's the day after the FA Cup final, so that could be Conte's last match.
Which, of course,
match.
He could still be very much involved in,
Others in the frame, Ancelotti, Mancini, Ranieri, probably the outsider in that race, but certainly I think most people expect it to be one of those names.
Interesting that with the way you say that, though, that when we look across the border there at Germany, how they're always looking for younger managers, Jochen Hunkes notwithstanding. In Italy, they tend to, they like to know your name, as they say in Cheers, don't they?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, Ventura was an older guy. It didn't work out. They want somebody of high calibre. I mean, I don't think Mancini is that one that's anywhere near that calibre. I mean, I think it's probably the right stage of Ancelotti's career, but if there's a chance for Conte to go back, if he has had enough of club football for a while, feels like there's unfinished business there. He did a really good job with an average team. There's good players. I mentioned Chiesa. There are many more coming through. You could really build something towards the next European Championship.
The current man, Di Biagi, he's not staying there, is he?
I wouldn't have thought so. He's the under-21 coach, so he does know all of these younger guys, like I mentioned, that are coming through.
Gareth Southgate style.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it will be... Di Biagio, because of what you mentioned there. I think they want a name to go in there. The two that keep getting mentioned are Ancelotti and Mancini, but Conte would be the best choice. Very expensive.
Okay, who's your star of the week, please?
Consigli of Sassuolo, the goalkeeper. Your goalie has to play well if you stop Napoli from winning, and he did make some big saves.
Okay, let me just tell you the two big games that are currently on. It's a half an hour gone between Atletico Madrid and Deportivo. That's 0-0. Clarence Seedorf still looking for his first win as manager of Deportivo. And in France, a little less time has gone there. It's still 0-0 between Lyon and Toulouse. Now, don't forget, we've got a new section for you at about 9:45. The Q&A, we can't think of a better name for it than that. We will do in the course of the next 7 days, where Mark will, it won't be me, Mark will answer any question you've got about European football, world football. Try and make it serious, but it doesn't have to be heavyweight. It can be lightweight as well. Anything you want to know, Mark will answer your questions. There's several ways to get in touch with us. Text your question to 81089. You can email us at talksport.com. You can tweet us at TalkSport, or give us a ring now, 08717 223 344. That's 08717 223 344, and we'll get you on to talk to Mark. In the last one, we'll phone you back, so that will essentially be a free phone call. You'll listen to Trans Europe Express. I'll give you your music homework very, very soon. And next up, we'll be talking about everything that's going on in Spain. Tonight's musical homework is songs about movement, about travel, about going places. This is Dion on the Belmonts, of course, the wonderful voice of Dion DiMucci and The Wanderer. And when she asked me which one I love the best, I tear open my shirt and I show a rosy on my chest, cause I'm a wanderer, yeah, a wanderer. I'll explain all about this in a little while. Let's just say it's to do with a team that this weekend made the longest trip you can make in a league match anywhere in the world. So songs about movement, travel, going places. Text me on 81089 and tweet me directly at Danny Kelly Words with your requests. I with my two fists of iron, but I'm going nowhere. Oh, yeah, I'm the type. We've also got a poll for you tonight here on Trans Europe Express. In the recent week, we've seen most of the important teams taking part in the World Cup. Who is your current favourite for the World Cup now that we've seen this batch of matches? And the ones we put in are Spain, Germany, Brazil and England. You may want to vote in that poll.
You shouldn't have done that, Danny. Why did you... You made us put England in, didn't you?
Actually, it was the rather mischievous producer. I think his bets have gone well this weekend and he's very, very mischievous. So there they are. If you go here, you could make an argument for one of the other teams outside of those. By all means, do. Be careful with Argentina, though, following their astonishing defeat during the week to Spain. I'll talk more about that when we get back into the show. Let's talk actually about Spain next, where your headline, we were going to say unbeatable Barca, but let's be truthful, unbeatable Messi, isn't it?
It is. Barca looked like losing for the first time in La Liga this season.
We can set the scene here. Amazingly, given the strength of some of these Real Madrid, Barcelona teams over the years, nobody's ever gone unbeaten in La Liga.
Not for a whole season, no. I think Sociedad actually hold the record over 38 games, but not in the same season. Barcelona are 30 games into doing that, though, Danny. And yep, it looked like being the run would end at 29. Sevilla, that team that Jose Mourinho talked up, were actually living up to Mourinho's hype. 2-0 up and fully deserved it. Vazquez and Luis Muriel got the goals. Could have been three. They always say 2-0 is a dangerous lead.
Yeah, but not with 3 minutes to go.
With Messi introduced after an hour and Luis Suarez on the pitch, it's never over. Suarez pulled one back after 88 minutes. Within a minute of that, Messi equalised outside the penalty area. Curling shot, not the hardest struck, but perfectly placed. I thought Rico should have saved
it. Yes, I agree with you, except that it was one that, for me, it's another step up in the technology of football from Lionel Messi, in that we've seen the thing where you pass the ball into the goal, but they're inevitably on the ground. He's now decided to put some height into it as well.
And there was a lot of curl as well, but I still think that Rico should have saved it. And you look down the fixture list, Barcelona, all the big teams that they've got still to play, all at home.
Yeah.
So if they really are focused on it, and that let's be serious, the Copa del Rey and the Champions League will take precedence over being unbeaten, because for all that it's great, it actually...
Still only one trophy,
isn't
it?
It is, yeah. So I don't think that they'll be putting it ahead of, you know, Champions League preparations, and we may still see Messi being rested for some games between now and the end of the season. They didn't play well, but they did manage to get that 2-2.
And of course, they're now heading for the title. The team in second place is Atletico Madrid, and they've just done themselves some good. They're playing at home to Deportivo, and after a difficult first 30 minutes, in which I think Deportivo got forward quite well, Madrid have gone ahead. Atletico have gone ahead with a Kevin Gamero penalty.
Very soft penalty as well, Danny.
Yeah, absolutely. But Gamero smashed it in. I guess that means that Griezmann isn't on the pitch. And it's 1-0 to them. We'll come back to that game in just a second. Off the back of that, we could talk about, Real Madrid.
Yeah, Real Madrid 3. 0 victory away to Las Palmas. Probably most significant for Gareth Bale's performance. 2 goals. One penalty. Benzema was also on target from the spot. So the talk in Spain is, has he done enough to force his way?
Oh, Deportivo have just missed an absolute sitter. That should have been an equaliser.
Clarence Seedorf's not happy on the touchline.
They have forced a whole series of corners. Oh, man, head it down. Well, very lucky there, Atletico Madrid. Still 1-0 to Madrid in that game there.
So the talk is, will Gareth Bale get into the team for this Champions League quarter-final against Juventus? Memphis Depay just scored for Lyon to put them 1-0 up against Toulouse.
He's in great form, isn't he?
He is, and it's a very important game, of course, for Lyon, that they're desperate to get back into the Champions League. They're in fourth spot at the moment, need the win against Toulouse, and that they've managed to get themselves in front. They've been dominating the first half of this game. No doubt that they fully deserve the lead. And Memphis has, with his right foot, has managed to curl one in from the edge of the area into the bottom corner. A lovely finish.
Yeah.
As I've been saying for a long time, I still think there's a big club in Memphis. He just needs to put it together for a longer sequence of games. I think in
beautiful
short
technique,
bursts,
by the way, beautiful technique.
In short bursts, he's right up there, but he just doesn't do it often enough. But getting back to Real Madrid, a very comfortable victory. Las Palmas.
All right, let me throw it straight into you. Champions League final. I don't know who it's going to be against. Is Bale starting for Real Madrid?
I think it would depend on who they played, because I think they've got this different way of playing now, depending on who it is. I would say, though, it's unlikely. I think that the way they played against Paris Saint-Germain with Lucas Vazquez, with doing a very good, solid defensive job, then maybe, and he loves Benzema and Ronaldo up front. So I think he would be more likely to be on the bench, just put it that way.
The problem for Zinedine Zidane is if they lose that final, that imaginary final we just put them into, with Bale on the bench, you look at the last two Champions League finals, and one of the turning points in everything is what Bale did. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean,
not a bad substitute.
Not a bad substitute. And it could be that the 30-minute burst or whatever that he could give would actually be better than him sort of struggling through fitness wise, which he has done for a lot of this season.
So I just mentioned that Atletico winning 1-0 against Depor. I mean, I know nobody expects Deportivo to win this game. But sooner or later, Clarence Seedorf, bless him, who's doing his nut about the penalty on the sideline there, he's going to have to win a game, because this is going on and on now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they're 7 points from safety. I don't think they've got any chance, really, of staying up. It was a surprise decision to give him the job. I mean, he was being linked with the Oldham position at one stage, and he's ended up at Depor. It was a tough task for anybody, really, to take. They've actually played. This is as good as I've seen them play away from home
exactly.
in ages. They're unlucky to be one down.
They have definitely been the more progressive, to use the modern parlance, the more progressive side in this first 40 minutes. The Spanish national team, we thought we'd mention each of these big teams as we go through the leagues. In the build-up to a World Cup, to take on one of the favourites and beat them 6-1, they must be just licking their lips, aren't they? Argentina.
On the back, of course, of that excellent 1-1 draw away to Germany, then destroyed, admittedly, a Lionel Messi-less Argentina, which is always easier than if Messi's playing. But it was a fantastic performance. Isco played well. There's talk that Aspas is trying to get his way into that number 9 position. Obviously, Morata scored today. Diego Costa's playing well. And Rodrigo, also on target against Germany, and then scored today for Valencia in their 1-0 victory at Leganés.
Yeah, no, look, you say they were without Messi, and I totally understand that, but that defence doesn't have Messi, and that Argentinian defence looked absolutely porous on the night. Who's your star of the week in Spain?
Oh, it's Rodrigo. Played well for Spain and then scored the goal that should enable Valencia to celebrate Champions League football next season.
Listen, thank you very much indeed for that, Mark. When we come back, we'll talk about Germany, where there was, we've got so much stuff to tell you about from the big game, the Clásica. Or as we're going to be calling it, something slightly different when we get back. Keep your requests coming in for songs about movement, travel, going places, going. And you can do those at 81089 or at me at Danny Kelly Words on Twitter. Keep voting in our poll. I'll tell you more about that when we come back. You're listening to Trans Europe Express. I'm Danny Kelly. He's Mark Langdon. It is Easter Sunday and you could be doing something else. So we're very, very grateful to each and every one of you for listening. With Jamiroquai knows no bounds. There seems to be no music homework that I can set that he can't find. Some song by the Behatted One, the Chapeaued One. This is Jamiroquai, I'm told, and Run Away. Run Around, Run Away. That's Mike Reed and Run Around, isn't it? Songs about travelling, movement, going places. I'll explain all that a little later in the show with an incredible story. Your requests keep coming, please, at 81089. And tweet you directly at Danny Kelly Words. Actually, let it play a little bit so that he does get his Jamiroquai fix. Yeah, Mark Langdon is here with me still. And next we're going to move on to Germany, where the biggest game of the season is called Der Klassiker. We're calling it, headline, Der Massaker.
Bayern 6, Borussia Dortmund 0.
And Bayern Munich declared. Make no mistake about that. They could have run up any score they wanted. Tell us about the first half.
Yeah, well, I mean, from a Dortmund point of view, it was absolutely horrendous. 5-0. As you say, could have been worse. Lewandowski scored very early on. I thought it was offside, and they went to VAR, and they decided it wasn't offside, and most people were confused by that. Maybe they'd seen a video of it that we hadn't seen, I'm not sure, but looked offside, but not even Peter Stöger could start complaining about that when further goals from James and Ribéry. The Müller goal was fantastic movement. But from a
hang on, Muller's got two great goals now in the past 2 weeks. It must be World Cup. Just running up to the World Cup, just in time for the World Cup.
Well,
he's done nothing for 3 years, the fella.
He was on the end of excellent work from other people, which is usually the Thomas Muller way. Castro was taken off inside 30 minutes. As far as Dortmund were concerned, they'd lost 5-1 and 4-0 on recent trips to the Allianz Arena. So maybe no surprise that it did finish 6-0.
No, but I mean, eventually it finished 6-0. You're absolutely right. I praise to you here, Mark. I don't know how you do this. You've come up with some astonishing background statistics to this defeat for Dortmund.
Right, okay. So
listen up, everybody. Listen to this.
5-0 at half-time was Dortmund's worst result at the half-time interval since 1978, when they were losing 6-0 against Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Uh-huh.
They would go on to lose that game 12-0.
Boom.
Jupp Heynckes, the Bayern Munich coach who oversaw that performance yesterday, scored 5 of the goals on that occasion. And in that Gladbach 12-0 win, they actually needed to win by at least 10 goals to have a chance of the title. They won 12. I mean, Bayern had beaten Dortmund 11-1 early in the 70s. And at half-time, you were starting to check those kind of history books to see if it could get anywhere. I mean, afterwards, Stöger, the Dortmund coach, said that there's some positives to take out of it.
Wow.
Apparently, it means that Dortmund will be leaving no stone unturned in sort of what they need to do for next season.
I would have thought no Stöger unemployed would be one of the things that's going to happen.
I mean, Stöger is getting it in the neck, and rightly so. I mean, they've appointed somebody that was bottom of the Bundesliga with the worst points total of any team ever going into the halfway stage of the season. Look, when they got rid of Thomas Tuchel, there were problems behind the scenes. I understand why Thomas Tuchel went. They got Peter Bosch in. Turned out to be a disastrous appointment. I think they've made an even worse one here. And yeah, he might still get them
and
in.
And the first of those stones that has been turned is that, you know, a very, very famous player there, Matthias Sammer, has come back with some kind of spurious title.
Yeah, he's just going to be a consultant now. He left Bayern Munich. He was in charge of sort of director of football there. He left it. He had an illness as well. So, you know, you wonder whether he could do that kind of job on a full-time basis. But certainly Dortmund, who've lost key people in the back room already, we've seen, you know, going off to Arsenal and whatever, they need some experienced heads in terms of where they go next for their managerial appointment. And, you know, we were talking earlier on, before we came on there, Asenhutl, the Leipzig coach, is talk of him signing a new contract. And we're just discussing, would you rather be the manager of Borussia Dortmund or Leipzig? Now, obviously, one team has got all of the history, all of the glamour associated with it. But you could argue you'd be more likely to have success at Leipzig in the next few years.
If I asked you this question, say I was offering you a 3-year contract, which side is more likely to win the title? I mean, no, take Bayern Munich out of it. Which is going to be title challengers in the next 3 years? Right now, you'd say Leipzig.
I think you would. I mean, Dortmund have lost their way a lot, and you wonder about some of the signings.
Yes, it's that, isn't it? Their extraordinary ability to spot a talent and develop them has just left them, whether temporarily, it's left them at the moment.
And I think maybe they've just got too many that have not quite developed, and it's only so long you can keep selling or
hello,
losing
Southampton.
The Lewandowski and when Götze was at his absolute peak and Gundogan, you know, Marco Reus hasn't been fully fit. I don't think Pulisic has been anywhere near as good as what everybody expected him to be in the last couple of months, and I don't blame him for that. He's only a young guy. I think that the whole team is wrong at the moment, and that's leading to some very dodgy performances.
And the door that's opened, which Leipzig haven't gone through this week, although, as you say, they did win this weekend at Hanover by 3-2, surviving a late VAR. That door has been kicked in to be the second team in best team in Germany by Schalke.
Well, Schalke and Dortmund, probably the biggest rivalry in German football. So the fact that Dortmund are, so 4 points behind them is a big, big problem for Dortmund, because it was a big problem for Schalke, because they were making too many wrong decisions on the back of the fact that Dortmund were successful.
Yeah, the pressure was killing them, wasn't it?
It was, and now it so quickly flipped, and Tedesco, their new coach, they seem to have solved that issue. How Dortmund need to do likewise in the near future. 2-0 victory over Freiburg.
Two very similar clubs, I mean, in industrial cities with massive support. And there's no reason why Schalke can't return to what they once were.
Schalke are a huge club, yeah, in terms of season tickets, one of the biggest clubs in Europe, never mind Germany. This
and
is
therefore
a monster
their club.
Their
disappearance from the top level of German football for the past 10 years is the mystery, not their arrival now.
No. And I mean, they're winning their league, aren't they? I mean, they're not going to, you know, they can't beat Bayern Munich.
Six wins on a spin, very rarely done in the Bundesliga.
Absolutely, as far as Schalke are concerned, anyway.
Okay, they're going to lose one of their best players. I think Max Meyer appears not to want to sign a new contract.
Well, yeah, obviously Goretzka's already off to Bayern Munich. Max Meyer was an attacking midfielder. Tedesco has changed him into a creative defensive midfielder in sort of the mould of Pirlo. Sits in front of the defence, gets the team going, but his performances for Schalke mean that he'll probably be off, and a lot of Premier League teams are having a look. You could imagine him at somewhere like Liverpool, Man City maybe even as well, if he carries on that
he's
level.
He's versatile
of
too, isn't he? If you're one of these who likes to change the team around
it
a bit.
Can. I mean, I'd like to think now, though, actually Schalke found the key to him, and that he wasn't an attacking midfielder all this time. And Pirlo started off as a number 10 and actually went back to being, in Italy and Germany, the number 6 or whatever, you know, just in front of the defence. I think maybe Max Martin, he'll struggle to be as good as Pirlo, but he certainly seems to have found his calling.
OK, now let's talk about the other end of the table, if I may. Two fine old clubs, two large clubs again, Cologne and Hamburg are really competing now to see who can make the biggest bish of this season. Now, this week's applause goes to Cologne, who managed to lose 6-0 at Hoffenheim.
Yes. Maybe Julian Nagelsmann, who had a bad sort of middle part of the season. He's put his name back in the right frame for one of these bit of, bigger jobs.
Well, I'll find only 4 points off the Champions League place again now.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I still don't think that they'll get there, but actually to be even up to seventh is still a good achievement, given they lost all their players, or certainly some key players, in the summer. But you're right, Cologne, having shown signs of improvement in recent weeks, sort of slipped back into the bad old ways. 6-0. Timo Horn, the goalkeeper, says the fans should get their money back. I mean, I totally disagree with that. If you're a fan and you travel, that's, you know, that can happen. And I don't think any fan should ever take their money back, actually.
It's the 6-0 away defeat that makes the, let's say, 3-1 victory at local rivals. That doesn't happen very often. Hello. And it's that makes it all the more sweeter, isn't it?
It is. And, of course, it was only before the international break that they did exactly that when they beat Leverkusen, one of their big rivals. So, you know, these things happen, and Cologne are going to, I think, go back down to Bundesliga 2. But they've had a European run. Things have gone horribly for them. Hamburg actually are showing signs of improvement under our friend Titz. A 1-1
Christian
draw away,
Titz, he's here.
A 1-1 draw away to Stuttgart is not
it's
a bad
a
result. And Lewis Holtby on the score sheet for Hamburg.
And a question for you. Is the Bundesliga the new Serie A of the 1980s?
3-0 draws, which is pretty rare.
It is.
In the goal-crazy Bundesliga, Leverkusen 0-0 with Augsburg. Hertha Wolfsburg, maybe not such a surprise, that one finished 0-0. And Mainz-Gladbach, two really out-of-form teams, played out a bit of a shocker today.
The good news, of course, is that the German national team, we heard about Thomas Müller, the rest of them, I won't crack my knuckles on air, it'll make somebody vomit, but I can't do it anyway. But they're really cracking their knuckles in preparation for the World Cup, aren't they?
They are. Not the greatest batch of friendlies, obviously beaten by Brazil, drew with Spain. The Spain game was fantastic. Brazil...
It was that game that I was actually referring to. That Spain game, I mean, Spain could come out of it and say we were also looking brilliant for the World Cup. The quality of the football was something else.
Champions League level. It was a real proper game. Usually these international friendlies are not great. This was fantastic. Brazil took the game really seriously. Not sure that Germany were. They haven't got a great record in friendlies. It's all about preparation. You know what's going to happen when the World Cup comes, their big players will turn up.
We know how close you study these things. Do you know what Germany's 11 will be at the start of the first game?
Oh, I think you can, because Jogi Löw is such, he's all about the equilibrium of the group. He'll stick, but he's such a loyal guy.
Let's assume that Neuer's fit. There's Neuer. Name the other 10.
I think Neuer will be fit. He's expected back soon. Kimmich and Hector will be the two fullbacks. It'll be Hummels and Boateng as the centre-backs. Up front, I think Timo Werner will force his way in. In terms of the midfield, I think it'll be Toni Kroos, Sami Khedira and Mesut Ozil playing in that number 10 role. I think on the right, Thomas Müller, 10 goals in 2 World Cups. The left is
isn't it?
It's a slight issue. I mean, Sane's playing so well for Manchester City that I think it would be a mistake if he picked anybody else.
Yes, and he's got to overcome his own nature there, hasn't he, to pick somebody from outside of that World Cup winning group. But Sane's showing again and again and again just what a wonderful footballer he is.
The other option would be Julian Draxler, who, of course, has done some excellent work for Jogi Löw in the past. Marco Reus, the wild card pick. As Leon, actually, I've got a penalty, Danny, to go 2-0 up. Memphis Depay from 12 yards. He's already scored one today. Mm-hmm. And I think if Lyon can get a second goal, they've thrown away some silly points already this season. But if they can get that second goal just before half time, should enable them to push on.
How can you write off Toulouse? Yaya Sanogo's playing up front for them.
Yep. There we go. 2-0 to Lyon.
Yes,
Memphis sent the goalkeeper the wrong way, put it in the same corner that he did his first goal. And Lyon are well on their way to maximum points. What I would say, as I just mentioned, they have chucked away some stupid points this season already.
What I will say, you're absolutely right. There is, with all due respect to Lyon, a fine football club, Olympic Lyonnais, there is another big club inside of Memphis Depay waiting to happen.
He's got... Ibrahimovic-style confidence about his own ability, and maybe that was an issue for him at Manchester United. I think the United move just happened too soon.
Mm. Yeah, and also at a time when the team was in just bang average form.
Yeah, he was hard. Part of that, though. He was meant to add dynamism, and he didn't.
Nobody was adding dynamism under that manager. No. He was a star of the week in Germany.
My star of the week is Florian Kohfeldt. I don't think we've had him before.
No.
He's the Werder Bremen coach. When he took over, they were in big relegation trouble. They're now up to 12th. They're not going to qualify for the Europa League, but they're pushed up safely into mid-table. Won a game today, beat Eintracht Frankfurt 2-1, and in the process damaged Eintracht's chances of qualifying for the Champions League. Yeah, but he's doing a fantastic job.
Four wins out of the last five. Really, exactly. Really good form. Thank you very much indeed, Mark. When we come back, we'll be talking about everything that's going on in France, including the return to fantastic form of Dimitri Payet. All that's coming up very, very soon here on Trans Europe Express. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. But I'm walking. Of course, the Proclaimers. Well done, whoever asked for this. I've got them on my screen just now. And our songs about movement and going places and travelling. The Mighty Proclaimers and 500 Miles. Mark, it's one of the things, all things I've done in my long and varied career. When I was a music journalist, I went on tour with the Proclaimers to the Outer Hebrides. And they played in
How far did you walk, Debbie?
Not very far. We went by little boats, though. Little tiny boats, because the gear is too heavy for the little aeroplanes. And I remember going to a school hall, I think it might have been on Benbecula, that little island, where they played that song about left from America, about having to leave Scotland to get a life. And I remember the kids in that hall, this wasn't a song, this was their actual life story being written. The tears ran down my fat old balloon of a face. You can get your request in for songs. Make them as good as this, please. You can text them at 81089 and tweet me directly at Danny Kelly Words on Twitter. In the second half, sure, I'll explain why we're doing travelling as the song tonight. Let's go to France, and High Five is the headline from France.
Oh, yeah. I mean, PSG have upset the odds once again, Danny, by winning.
How do they do it, these underdogs?
I mean, so plucky, aren't they? fifth League Cup in a row. 3-0 victory against Monaco in Bordeaux. Cavani penalty early on. That kind of set the mood. Di Maria made it 2-0. Ronny Lopez had a chance to reduce the arrears. Missed a one-on-one. Then Falcao had a goal ruled out for VAR. Those two VAR decisions, because the Cavani penalty also went to VAR, took over 5 minutes, which upset everybody, including Lizarazu, who started comparing it to bad sex and all kinds of weird metaphors.
You wouldn't know anything about that.
No.
So and then, you and your mate, Patrick Kluivert.
I keep telling him not to text me, but he won't get the message. So Moutinho went off on a stretcher, injured his knee. Don't think it's going to rule him out of the World Cup, but you always wonder, don't you, when these things happen late on in the season. Cavani made it 3-0. PSG, easy
right.
Winners.
After the game, the Monaco manager, Jardim, was saying, no, I won't be the new PSG manager. He was trying to drop a hint that it might be Mourinho. But
He said it may be a Portuguese manager, but it won't be me.
Right. Well,
so maybe Carlos Carvajal.
That narrows it down slightly, doesn't it? The news coming out of Paris, and of course, this is one of the big jobs in a summer, which is going to be an absolute carousel, a roundabout for the big clubs. I mean, maybe 7 or 8 of the top clubs in Europe are going to require new managers this season after the World Cup. The name coming out is Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah, absolutely. Seems to be the favourite in France. According to reports he interviewed this week, it went brilliantly. He speaks perfect French, which, of course, Unai Emery always battered around the chops for his lack of French when he first arrived, was always on the back foot. When you go to Paris Saint-Germain, do your press conferences in Spanish, that does not go down very well at all. Tuchel speaks French. Of course, he left Dortmund under a cloud. Mm-hmm. He's somebody that, in terms of the very highest echelon of manager, he hasn't reached that level yet. Maybe he can get there, maybe he can't. I really like Thomas Tuchel. I'm a little bit surprised if it is Tuchel that they've not gone for a bigger one.
My question exactly. Why do they keep Unai Emre, Tuchel? Why do they keep going for people who are not in that absolute elite that the Premier League suddenly seems to be specialising in? Why don't they go and get themselves a Champions League manager?
Yes, I think that would... I mean, I think he's an upgrade on Unai Emery. I do believe that.
And he has great potential, but who knows what he's going
to
be?
Yeah, I suppose it's difficult to get these managers out of their clubs. I mean...
Hang on, they got Neymar.
They got Neymar, but that was slightly different in, of course, that they could... Neymar wanted to leave Barcelona.
He's a git?
Yeah, because of his own personal reasons and obsession with winning the FIFA Ballon d'Or, which just seems very strange in a team sport. But where do they go?
I mean, no time for the Ballon d'Or.
Somebody else that was linked with a job, Pochettino, in a very similar mould to Tuchel, in somebody that everybody thinks could be very good and is on the verge of taking that jump into the next level of coach, right to the top. But hasn't... Is that an opportunity, though? It's Tuchel not won the Champions League because he hasn't been given the opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's maybe what Paris Saint-Germain are looking at. Conte, I still think... I mean, Conte's record in the Champions League isn't great. But, I mean, I would like to see him go to Paris Saint-Germain.
And let me just give the latest from our poll, actually. I forgot to do that a little while ago. Our poll is, having seen the recent internationals, who is your favourite for the upcoming World Cup? At the moment, Brazil languishing in fourth place with 20%. England, 23% ahead of Brazil. Spain, 26%. And Germany, 31%. Very close indeed. Mitchell says, why not France? Perfectly good question, in my opinion. Michael says, why not Belgium? Even more pointed, in my opinion. You say, why not Uruguay?
Yeah, I mean, just in, if you have a look at their centre-backs, Godin and Jimenez, the two centre-halves, both play for Atletico Madrid. Cavani and Suarez are up front. I think if you're looking for somebody outside of the obvious, Uruguay tick a lot of the boxes.
OK, you can vote in that at TalkSport on Twitter, at Danny Kelly Words on Twitter, and at Mark Langdon on Twitter. Let me just rattle through what's going on. Leon, you said, winning 2-0 at home to Toulouse. Dimitri Payet has now got the most assists in
2018. Yeah, in European football, he's got the most assists this year, calendar year.
And let's have a 1 minute on France, the national side after their recent internationals.
Yes, obviously lost to Colombia, which wasn't a great start. Hugo Lloris made an error for one of the goals. There were also other defensive problems. Pogba wasn't picked. Matuidi played instead of him. They played 4-4-2. Didn't quite work. Mbappe's out on the right midfield. Thomas Lemar on the left-hand side of midfield. Griezmann and his pal Giroud, the absolute darling of Deschamps' side, was up front. Changed things around for the second game in Russia. Now, Brazil had already tonked Russia a couple of days earlier. France ended likewise. Mbappe made the centre of the whole team, built it around him. I mean, the goalkeeper didn't cover himself in glory, but Mbappe still scored twice. Pogba played very well. It's just about finding the right 11. And it's not easy because they've almost got too many good players. And I think that is hindering Deschamps.
OK, so who's your star of the week in France?
Oh, I just mentioned him. Mbappe scored twice for France. And all three assists in the League Cup final. Fantastic.
And you're absolutely right. They're going to have to find a system, and no matter what the manager's obsession with Olivier Giroud is, they're going to have to find a system that gets the best out of an incredible squad of players that they've got. But that's what these World Cup build-up matches are supposed to be about. And don't forget, the World Cup is just weeks away now. More about that in the second half of the show. And every game is live here on TalkSport, your home of live football.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, Danny Kelly's Trans-Europe Express on TalkSport.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's edition of Trans Europe Express with the aforementioned Danny Kelly, a name above the door of the pub, but alongside me, of course, Mark Langdon is here with us, so it should be a belting second hour, during which we will preview the Champions League and the Europa League, bring you a European cult hero. Sports of Manchester City might want to listen out for that one in particular. Bring you Simon Caller's latest travel report from Russia. Every game, of course, on the World Cup live here on Talk Sport. Take you around all the other European leagues. And the first of a new thing, the Trans-Europe Express Q&A. If you've got a question for Mark Langdon about anything to do with European football, where is so-and-so, what's happened to so-and-so, what's happening at, anything like that, by all means, get your questions in now. You can ring us first and foremost, 08717 22 3344, or if you're too lazy or drunk on a bank holiday to do that, and by all means text your question to 81089 or tweet it directly to @TalkSport. That phone number again is 08717 22 3344. Ask Mark Langdon anything you want about European football. That is all going to be squeezed in with our poll and our musical homework to just 55 minutes of radio. This is, as they're saying, thank you very much indeed, Roll. Mark, let's talk about the Champions League and the Europa League. We've got some games for you live here on Talk Sport as we head into the quarter-final stages of these tournaments. But I suppose the big news over the week is not just tinkering, but significant rule changes.
Yeah, some of the more minor ones. We've got a fourth substitute to be used during extra time, which makes absolute sense, yeah, given the way that football has moved on. We've also got two games in the group stages kicking off 2 hours before, so slightly staggering the kickoff times, so we'll be able to see more matches. I'm all for that. But perhaps the biggest one, no more cup-tied players.
Really, really important change, this, isn't
it? I think this could, in terms of the January transfer market, sorry to talk about that, yeah, when it's so far away, but you so often hear about teams would buy player X, but they can't. He's cup tied. Obviously, Barcelona still went through with their Philip Coutinho deal, even though he was cup tied because he'd already played for Liverpool. I think this makes sense. I'm for it. You can only do free. You can only register free players. I understand that it could mean a Man City or a Paris Saint Germain, in theory, could go out and spend whatever on some more players. I think they'd do that anyway, yes, to be honest. I think what this does is...
an example would be that Aubameyang, during the winter, when it became clear that Dortmund were prepared to let him go, I'm not sure who might have gone from otherwise, but they couldn't play him in the Champions League for the rest of this year.
No, and it becomes such a convoluted rule that he couldn't play in it, because even though he couldn't play in the Europa League, even though he hadn't played in the Europa League, but because Dortmund had dropped from the Champions League into the Europa League and he didn't play for Dortmund anymore, but he did play for Arsenal, he still wasn't allowed to play.
Which is nonsense.
It is nonsense.
Yeah.
And I, as a football fan, first and foremost, I want to see the best players in the latter stages of these competitions. I want to see Coutinho maybe in the Champions League final. I think it robs us of a star player if Barcelona get there and he can't play in it. Similarly, Arsenal Europa League, they should be able to play a Aubameyang. So I'm very much for it. I do understand why people are slightly nervous, but this idea that, oh, well, you know, you could go and, if, say, Man City got Basel, they could go and buy all of Basel's players and guarantee a path through to the quarterfinals. There's nobody from that Basel that would get into Man City team anyway. So
no, and that was always the reason why they brought in these rules. Yeah. So you wouldn't get Real Madrid get to the a certain place in the tournament and buy up the opposition's players. But that was before financial fair play as well. It was a different world.
And financial fair play, you know, people mock financial fair play, and it's not an easy one to explain. And that's because nobody really knows the books, and I think that the rules are quite complicated. They're complicated for a reason.
It's definitely affecting someone like Paris Saint-Germain now, isn't it? Their ability to buy players behind that amazing front three that they've assembled is limited.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they signed Lassana Diarra on a free transfer. You can't tell me that was Paris Saint-Germain's first
target. That can't
target,
have been the plan, can it?
No, it can't have been the plan. So I think that financial fair play is working to some extent. Maybe not as much as some people would like, but I tend to think this is a good rule change overall.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the actual games then. Starting the Champions League, there's for British people, of course, there's a very juicy tie on Wednesday. But let's start on Tuesday with what looks, as in recent years, been the final: Juventus against Real Madrid.
Yes, I fancy Real Madrid to go through. I think they're over their bad spell. And as I mentioned earlier on, I don't think that Juventus are playing particularly well. I mean, Tottenham had them on the ropes and couldn't just deliver that knockout blow to them. Real Madrid, if they get them in a similar position, I don't see them being anywhere near as wasteful or as forgiving in that role. Juventus are missing a couple of players. Pjanic and Benatia are suspended for that first leg. Key absentees, no doubt.
Pjanic, particularly at the home game, if they were going to get into a groove and start to attack Real Madrid, he sets that tempo, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and Benatia has been a big player for them at the
I'd
heart of
the
defence.
I'd be more worried about if it's the game in Madrid that Benatia was missing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And obviously, Barzagli can come in there and play that role. But Real Madrid put Juventus away. They absolutely dominated them in midfield in that Champions League final. Back in, was it May or June? Mm-hmm. I think it was June. I don't think Juventus have done anywhere near enough to rectify the same thing. So why? No two games of football are ever the same, but how do Juventus go from being so comprehensively outplayed to somehow dominating Real Madrid in that key midfield area?
Well,
don't
That's why the coaches are getting 150 grand a week, to be absolutely frank.
Yes.
We'll see what he can do.
Yes, but there's only so much a coach can do. I mean, Allegri maybe is one that we should have mentioned in the PSG ranks. I mean,
he's
probably deserving of that. I mean, Juventus are a massive club themselves, but I feel like Juventus have missed their chance to win this competition.
Right. Last year would have been it. Sevilla take on Bayern Munich, a Bayern Munich team that appears to be rounding, even by their own standards, into form just in time.
Such a positive team Jupp Heynckes picked for that Dortmund game. Ribery and Robin on the wings, Lewandowski through the middle, Muller and James in behind.
Amazing.
So Sevilla, having faced next to no forwards when they played 180 minutes against Manchester United, have suddenly got it all on. I think it'll be a high-scoring game. I just think that Bayern Munich have got too much quality.
I think it'll be a high-scoring game because I think Munich will run up a score.
Yeah. I mean, look, Sevilla showed against Barcelona they've got a threat going forward. Even when they were tonked by Atletico Madrid the other week, they did score goals. They just conceded five. If you concede five to Atletico Madrid,
wow,
and the way that Atletico played, Griezmann was on fire that night. Bayern Munich, with all of their weapons in the final third, I think will definitely go through. I mean, Sevilla have got a very good home record. That's their best chance. It's an intimidating arena. I just don't see them progressing over 180 minutes.
And then on Wednesday, live here on TalkSport, we've got Barcelona against Roma. Come back to that. But of course, at Anfield, it's Liverpool against Manchester City. And I think we have to take into account that it is not a Premier League game where Manchester City are currently running everyone ragged. I think we have to accept that this is a different thing and a new test for Manchester City's wonderful
absolutely.
Team.
Absolutely. And of course, Liverpool are the team that ended City's invincible bid in terms of the Premier League. They scored four goals. I think it was the one occasion when Ederson played like Claudio Bravo. Other than that, he's been fantastic. I just think this will be an amazing game. I think Man City's players or their staff have made a mistake in talking about the atmosphere and wanting, you know, to make sure that the coach has got a safe passage through. And I think that's a mistake, because you're only going to build up what is going to be probably the best atmosphere in any of these matches.
Yeah, and the Liverpool fans have a part to play there. And
they will play
it. And City have invited them so to do.
They have. What you would say is that City on the counter-attack have got brilliant options. So have Liverpool. Obviously, City are favourites. I mean, you've got to look at the fact that they're well clear of Liverpool in the Premier League. But over...
They're a better team.
I mean, you could say they're the best team in Europe. I think they are the best team in Europe. But Liverpool are not that far behind them. And this will be, in terms of a one-off game, I'm not saying over course of a season they can't live with City. Over 90 minutes or 180 minutes, I think this is just going to be brilliant.
I mean, some of City's football against Everton this weekend were just... I mean, admittedly, an Everton team...
Liverpool are not statues, are they, in midfield like Everton?
Everton, managed by a man who 20 months ago was the England manager. Extraordinary performance by Everton. We'll come on to that, no doubt, tomorrow night when I'm back here for kickoff with Simon Jordan and Gordon Strachan. Make a case for Roma finding a way past Barcelona in 3 hours, I dare you.
I suppose what you would say is that they've got goals in them, Roma. They did very well at Stamford Bridge earlier on in the season when Chelsea were playing better than they are now. That's about it. I'm sorry. I mean,
you run a personality, haven't you?
I mean, you know, Dzeko is the type of forward that maybe can cause problems if you get balls into the box.
Yeah,
but... Titi and PK, I mean, we'll struggle against that if Roma can deliver the balls into the box. But Roma are going to struggle with Suarez and Messi much more. And I'm struggling to make a case for Roma.
Dave, let me just remind you then, here on TalkSport, live on Tuesday, full commentary of Juventus against Real Madrid. And live on Wednesday on TalkSport 2, full commentary of Barcelona against Roma. Pick me out some of these ties from the Europa League, rather, that have caught your eye.
Well, as we should start with Arsenal, because this is obviously their chance back into the Champions League. I think it's a really winnable game against CSKA Moscow. I don't think you can ask for much more at this stage, Danny, of a Europa League competition.
They got the juiciest draw there, didn't they?
They did, and I don't know how Lyon threw it away against CSKA Moscow. They were in complete control. Lyon have got that in them, not for the first time this season. But I think that this is a really good opportunity for Arsenal to get through to the semi-finals. CSKA Moscow did win 2-1 today at Rostov. But like I say, I think this is a really good tie for Arsenal. The one I'm looking forward to most, probably Lazio against Red Bull Salzburg.
Yeah, we seem to be establishing here on Trans Europe Express, where this is where you find these things out. Red Bull Salzburg, well, I know, secretly good at football.
They are. I mean, a satellite club for Leipzig, so they get Naby Keita before you've heard of Naby Keita, and then they go to Leipzig, and then they go to Liverpool, and that's the food chain. They're doing brilliantly domestically. Okay, it's only Austrian football, but they've done fantastically well in the Europa League. They are knocked out Dortmund and deserve to beat Dortmund for all that Dortmund have got their issues. Lazio like to play football as well. Salzburg play a progressive style of play. They press high, got a lot of young, energetic players in their team. Obviously, this is kind of new ground for them, you know, quarterfinals of a Europa League and their players. But if you've been to Dortmund and dealt with the atmosphere there, you know, why not again against Lazio? I'm really interested to see how they get on. They won the UEFA Youth League last season, so this is a team that's definitely on the up.
For me, the one I'm really looking forward to is Leipzig against Marseille, because Leipzig, to me, watching their horrible word, project, develop, we've seen it do very well in German domestic football, and now we've got an opportunity to see if they can do it on a European stage. And, you know, if they were to get to the final even of the Europa League, it's definitely telling you something about the way the world is changing.
I think most people would love to see a RB Leipzig and RB Salzburg tie at some stage. That'll be one for the popcorn and just see how everybody deals with that situation. I think the champion, you've got to remember, this was Leipzig's first ever European campaign. Completely new to the manager, completely new to the fans.
That's why I'm following it like a science experiment.
So, when they failed in the Champions League and Timo Werner had to go off in the first half away to Besiktas, his ears were hurting and he was unbalanced by the noise inside the stadium. This was just all completely new to a club the idea of playing midweek and then weekend, it was just alien to them. I think they've learned as the season has gone on how to deal with that. They're now in a much better place. Marseille with Torvan, with Payet are a good side as well. A lot more experience in, you know, Luis Gustavo and players like that. I think Leipzig probably are the favourites. It's a close game now, Phil.
And finally, and I don't, we've got about a minute for this, perhaps a little less. I don't suppose Sporting Lisbon are looking forward one little bit to playing Atletico Madrid.
No, I mean, Atletico, absolutely the most likely winners of this competition. Then it wasn't their target for the campaign, but they're out the Copa del Rey. They can't win the La Liga. So what have they got left? They'll give the Europa League everything. They're running on a very small squad. That would be the only concern for Atletico. Any more injuries, and they really would be stuffed.
And, of course, they're winning 1-0 with about 74 minutes gone in the home game against Deportivo right now. And I see Fernando Torres getting ready to come on, presumably, so they can rest Diego Costa for a few minutes for the, in exactly that tie coming up on Thursday when they take on Sporting Lisbon. Thank you very much indeed for all of that, Mark. When we come back, we'll be bringing you a European cult hero, and, say, Simon Caller's latest instalment of what you can expect in certain towns and stadiums when you go to Russia in the summer for the World Cup, where every game is live here on TalkSport.
OK, everybody, lie down on the floor and keep calm.
This is what KLF is about. Also known as the Justified Ancients of Moon Moon. Furthermore known as a jam.
Oh, Mark is straight into his raving trousers for this one. Russ in Bury requested this. The KLF, of course. The Copyright Liberation Front. And Last Train to Transcentral. We're doing songs about travel and movement and going places. And your requests, please, at 8.10.89 and at Danny Kelly Words on Twitter. Let this blat away behind me while I tell you we've also got feature coming up to call the Trans-Europe Express Q&A. Call now with your questions about European football, past or present, on 08717 223344. 08717 223344. Book your calls in now, and at 9:45 we'll call you back. That's a free call. Or you can tweet your questions to Mark Langdon at TalkSport, or text 81089. The text will cost you 50 pence. Acid! See my grey old head now and my husk of a man you see before you. One day stop in the street and ask me about my adventures with the KLF. Oh, it's good. Now this time the mix could work better than usual because of the banging tune here. Here we go, Trans-Europe Express, cult footballer.
Incredible! Incredible Zlatan Ibrahimovic!
Now, today's cult football here on Trans-Europe Express, very unusual. It's a request from you, the listeners. Of course, we are nothing if not seeking to please. This is an incredible career, an incredible footballer we're going to talk about, who played for all kinds of weird and wonderful clubs, but made his real super reputation, I guess, here in England. Mark, who are we going to talk about tonight?
Yeah, the request was for Georgi Ginkladze, one of Manchester City's favourite sons, despite the influx of, you know, David Silva and Sergio Aguero and all these brilliant players.
He's a total legend with that generation of Manchester City fans. Of course he is.
Just one of the last players, probably, that was able to get away with the fact that he didn't want to do any defending, any pressing, any kind of dirty work, if you like. He just wanted
to play
football.
He was so technically gifted that I guess now people would say, well, he wouldn't have run enough or run in the right places. But he was a beautiful, beautiful player, getting the ball under control, deciding what he wants to do with it. He could run with it, he could pass, he could beat a man. It was a fantastic little footballer.
His heat map off the ball would be interesting.
I think heat would not be the appropriate word.
No, I mean, obviously, he played for a couple of clubs in Tbilisi, the biggest of those, Dynamo Tbilisi. He was, somebody that came through Georgia or was seen as a big star locally.
Now, we should make the point here, though, that these clubs are kind of lost to history now, but Dinamo Tbilisi, wasn't it time? A real factory for turning out brilliant technical footballers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
they didn't play for Georgia because it was still part of the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union's team would fail because the Georgians and the Russians wouldn't pass to each other during it. But there was... I have seen at least two brilliant Dinamo Tbilisi teams in my lifetime. Because they were picking virtually the national team for Georgia, and he came out of that.
Yeah, and had a little spell, Boca Juniors.
Amazing.
But it was at Manchester City where he made his real big splash.
Just 3 years, but he made such an impression with people.
An unbelievable impact. A number 10 type player. I think what made him so special to the Man City fans, apart from being the only one really that they wanted to watch in that bad spell, was the fact that he stayed when they were relegated. And he says, and we'll have to take his word for this, he turned down some of Europe's biggest clubs, including Barcelona, to play in the English second division.
I mean, I think you're right. So didn't he survive two successive relegations with Manchester City and just carried on?
He did. After the second of those, though, he did leave. And I think this is where he maybe falls into the cult hero rather than somebody that actually went on and really established himself in European football that he had the ability to
do. He's a proper cult, this fella. This is what we were always looking for, yeah.
He went to Ajax. Now, what an opportunity that was in the late 90s to really go and show. And Ajax, a team that's traditionally built around playing this brilliant football and all this kind of stuff. An opportunity to make it, and Man City were a big club, but a real failing club in England at the time. So he goes to Ajax, barely played, and he said the reason he was so unhappy and he sort of had a broken heart when he was in Amsterdam is that the manager didn't know where to play him, and he often stuck him out on the wing, which is where most coaches, when they've got somebody where they don't know where to put them,
the
mercurial midfielder, they end up on the wing. It's just a default position for somebody that you can't fit into the team.
When I was preparing for this, I thought there's actually a quote that said, I didn't really get on with life in Amsterdam. Man, if you're not happy in Amsterdam, you're not going to be happy anywhere, are you? Let's be honest.
He wasn't happy in Amsterdam because the team wasn't built around him like it was at Manchester City. So,
and he came back and had three really good years at Derby County.
He did, yeah. He said he didn't play against Man City one time away from home because he didn't want to, because he was too upset to play against City. He actually won a title with Anaphorcius in Cyprus. But this is somebody, I think, that had the natural ability to have made it and played, you know, real high-level Champions League football, and he didn't. He'll make it into probably every Manchester City team of the decade, team of, you know, of all time, because the fans absolutely adore him, and rightly so, because he brought joy, and that's absolutely what football should do. But he didn't have a position. He didn't do any defending. He just made people smile when they watched him.
And if you were to do a poll right now among Manchester City supporters, pick your all-time 11, they would be leaving out David Silva, a certain generation, to put in Georgie Kinclancy.
They'd probably try and squeeze both of them in, wouldn't they, actually? I mean, that would be...
But they've got to find Colin Bell as well. They've got a lot of people to fit into
team. They have, but Kinclancy, just one of the greatest players to have ever played for Manchester City in the eyes of the supporters.
Absolutely,
anyway.
And a proper European cult hero. Next here on TalkSport, it's time for our latest update from what you can expect when you go to the World Cup in Russia. Well, I never tire of saying it, every game live here on TalkSport. Simon Calder, Britain's leading travel writer and broadcaster, brings you another town and another stadium.
Stadion. Stadium.
Yekaterinburg Arena is the ground that's furthest from Moscow, on the far side of the Ural Mountains from Europe, and it's possibly also the stadium that looks closest to the old Soviet Union. If you're one of those fans who went to support your team in the UEFA away games to places like Traktor Minsk and Dinamo Tbilisi, you'll be familiar with the style. The stadium was built in 1953, the same year that Stalin died, and if it's a dull old match, FIFA recommends that you enjoy the architectural and decorative features typical of Soviet neoclassicism. And that was used, it says, lavishly in the construction of the stands, along with decorative art in the form of sculptures, vases and banners. A crowd of 35,000 will be in to appreciate the architecture, if not the football.
Матчи, которые нужно посмотреть. Matches to see.
Just the four matches in Yekaterinburg, starting with what I think might be quite a good one. 15th of June, Egypt, Uruguay in Group A. 21st of June, France, Peru. Ooh, that's going to be good in Group C. 24th, Japan, Senegal. And then a decider, no doubt, in Group F on the 27th of June, Mexico versus Sweden.
Rating путешествий Talksporta. Talksport travel rating.
Yekaterinburg is the only venue in Asia, and you can spend a day and a bit on the Trans-Siberian Railway from Moscow, reaching the city. It's just past the watershed of the Urals. If you look out the train window at the right time, you'll see a sign basically saying, "Welcome to Asia." There's a railway museum at the station, which will be of passing interest. But the reason most people come here as tourists is to see the golden-domed Church on the Blood, built in the early 21st century on the site of the 1918 Romanov executions. Oh yes, a century ago, the ruling family were taken into a basement and shot. Oh dear. Today, apart from the church, which has been built over the site of their unfortunate demise, you can go and see the Urals Mineralogical Museum or the Ural Geology Museum. If neither of those appeal for some reason, then take a trip out of town to Rasputin's birthplace or just get on with some nightlife. Now, I come from Crawley, but some of the very dodgiest pubs and clubs I've ever been to are in Yekaterinburg. Really, take care out there. The Rosy Jane and Dr. Scotch are slightly better than most. But in terms of places to stay, I like the Meeting Point Hostel. It's like so many other hostels, just a Russian apartment with a few bunk beds. It's fun and friendly, but it sleeps only six, so what the remaining 34,994 people will do, who knows? Anyway, TalkSport travel rating out of 5 for Yekaterinburg. I'll give it 2.
The city's ripped backside. Thank you for all these wonderful tunes you've been choosing tonight in our musical homework. Iggy Pop, of course, and The Passenger, as we continue, and I will explain it in the next section, to celebrate travel and movement and going places. We've got enough music for now, so what we need now is for you to call us now. If you've got a question for Mark Langdon, absolutely anything about European or world football, now is the time. 0817 22 3 3 4. We've got plenty of tweets and emails. It will be a great section anyway. If you want to get your voice on air, 0817 22 3 3 4. Any questions to do with anything past, present or future about European football, you will have access to the greatest brain on the planet, even if he's got a sniffle. Mark, before we do the Q&A, where you're going to establish yourself as the greatest football expert on the planet, we've got about 7 or 8, 9 leagues to get through still in Europe. Let's rev up the motor straight away and start by going to the closest league title race still happening in Europe, and that's in Turkey.
Yes, all of the big teams won this weekend. Beşiktaş 1-0, Başakşehir 2-1, and Galatasaray 2-1. Fenerbahçe are not in action until tomorrow. So it's as you were, Galatasaray 57, Başakşehir 56. Beşiktaş wouldn't rule them out completely just yet, 53. Anderson Talisca, been linked with a lot of Premier League teams, scored an absolute beauty.
Speaking of the Premier League, Bapifemi Gomez also scored again. He seems to score every single week. Let's go over to Portugal, where in the language of what you do for a living with a Racing Post, two-horse race.
Yeah, Sporting are out of the race now. I mean, they were on the, only on the fringes anyway. 1-0 defeat at Braga. Belenenses v Porto is tomorrow. Benfica temporarily gone top. 2-0 victory over Guimarães. Hodas got both of the goals.
Which reminded me, have you finished your World Cup book?
Of course, Danny. It was never in doubt. I can't believe you were...
Let beacons be lit in the high places, the land. Let bunting be unfurled and the bells ring out. You've actually finished the thing.
I have, yeah, but when it's actually on sale, there'll be more plugs than B&Q for it, no doubt, Danny. But yeah, late April, it'll be hitting the shops and the shelves of online selling.
Well,
shops.
I've been told by a friend who works for W. H. Smith that they're planning, other bookshops are available, to issue body armour to their staff because of the speed at which it will be leaving the shelves.
It's not the best 20,000 words I've ever written, but I think it could be the most informative. So hopefully,
what's going to be called?
It's the Racing Post Betting Guide to the World Cup, but okay. It's not actually all about betting. That there's plenty of stuff in it if you're not into your betting. That's quite a small part of it.
And I like the way that the off air we'll discuss it further. The Belgium FA asked you to rewrite part of it.
Well, not the Belgium a sponsor in Belgium because it's going Flemish. It's going in
French. Of course, it's going Flemish.
Well, it's
will it go Walloon?
No. And the Walloon Derby was actually this weekend.
Well, let's talk about that in a little while because, let's talk about Holland next, if I may. PSV still very much in charge over there. And Ajax, well, keeping up the chase, they're going to get a Champions League place, but they're unlikely to catch them, aren't they?
They're lucky to be only seven points behind. PSV won 5-1. Ajax were trailing to Groningen. A missed penalty turned the game. Cliver equalised. Justin Cliver, the young winger for Ajax, equalised. Huntelaar, at the other end of the age scale, scored a very, very late winner. It's still 7 points. It could quite easily have been more.
Speaking of points, Atletico Madrid have won that game against Deportivo. A goal to nil, that 33rd minute penalty for Kevin Gamero. It was soft, but it was a shirt pull, and the referee saw it, so Atletico Madrid won Deportivo nil. Meanwhile, it's still 2-0 to Lyon, with about 13 minutes to go there in their game against Toulouse. An important game for Lyon, both those goals so far by Memphis Depay. Now, we've got a lot to talk about here. We must talk about Russia.
Yes, well, okay. Where do you want to start here? Do you want to start with the Spartak Moscow story? I mean, this is a sad one. Of course, the tragedy in Russia of last week, with so many people dying in the shopping complex following that fire. Spartak's fans, as a way of marking it out of respect, refused to make a noise in the first half. So we often hear of, you know, 1 minute silences. This was a 45 minute silence during the game. Spartak won but by 2-1, and actually puts them right in the hunt for the title race, because they're only 2 points behind Lokomotiv Moscow, who lost 2-1 to Amka Perm in a game that was technically an away fixture, but it was played at Lokomotiv Stadium. And this is something that you don't hear about too often. The accusation is that Amka effectively sold the fixture. Now, we need to...
We'll talk about Greece in a minute.
Yeah. Amka, their pitch is in a terrible state. Not allowed to play home matches in Perm. Their nearest stadium, or the one that they put down to the Russian Federation to play their games in such a scenario, is, I think the pronunciation is UEFA.
UEFA Thin Mint, yeah.
So they were playing Zenit today. And so Amka said yesterday, well, we can't play there, obviously. So what we'll do is we'll play 1,400 kilometres away at Lokomotiv Stadium, because... well, why not? Obviously, the talk in Russia is that basically Lokomotiv incentivised that in a financial way. You can have all the gate receipts, you know, various other little bits and bobs. Let's play the game in our state. Now, Amka are in financial problems. They only struggled to just get past the winter break. So they said, yes, what a great idea. Lokomotiv think, well, we're playing at home, we'll turn them over. They didn't. They lost the game 2-1.
travel is becoming an issue in the Russian leagues for various reasons. I'm indebted to Michael Yokin at Yokin on Twitter, who tweeted me today about a game that happened yesterday. Mark, it's the longest journey any team can make for a league match in world football. Baltika, it's the second division in Russia. Baltika Kaliningrad, and Kaliningrad, of course, is that enclave of Russia that actually should be Germany, but European politics is complex. They played against Luk Vladivostok in the second division in Russia. It's a 12-hour flight each way. It's a total of 10,000 kilometres, the round trip. And, of course, the game ended 0-0. The point I'm making there is that there's a lot of talk. The players of Vladivostok are saying it's all right for Kaliningrad. They have to do this once a year. Every one of our away games is a 10, 11 or 12-hour flight. And there's a lot of talk about dividing the Russian league, particularly the second division, to regionalise. It used to be regionalised. And look, you used to be in the eastern part of it. But they're literally on the Sea of Japan playing against a team who are on the Baltic. An extraordinary set of fixtures.
Yeah, and of course, that's why the music homework was all to do with travel. I'm sure that there'll be lots of fans of Leeds United say, oh, we'd do that. We'd love an away day, 12 hours.
Quick snow update from Russia.
Well, Mancini didn't enjoy his Zenit won, but they won in an absolute snowstorm, 2-1. And Mancini, if you go onto Twitter, onto Roberto Mancini's personal site, you'll see he's posted a picture of himself in the snow. We're in April now.
Football's back in Greece.
It is, yeah. Savidis, our pal Savidis, the Paok owner, of course, an astonishing story.
Gun owner.
The gun owner coming onto the pitch with a gun. He's been banned for 3 years. Paok have been given a 3-point deduction, which really damages their title hopes. They did win at the weekend 2-0. AEK have beaten Panathinaikos, so it really is AEK's to lose. Olympiacos dropped points as well, but we are back in Greece. Coincidentally, Paok and Savidis are both appealing against those penalties.
They're doing their thing, their special thing in Belgium, and it's not their fault, but Club Bruges have really blown their lead, haven't they?
They're 12 points advantage at the end of the regular season. It's down to 6. So yeah, I don't know what the Belgian term for Spursy is, but Club Bruges are certainly doing that. They don't actually play until tomorrow against Genk. Genk, the big winners this weekend, they won at Anderlecht. And we was talking about the derby earlier on. That was won by Standard Liège, 1-0 against Charleroi.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, for Sweden, a couple of things. The season started today. Incidentally, the stadium that Simon Calder described in his update about Ekaterinburg was opened today. So Russia getting ready for that World Cup in a few weeks' time. Sweden started their season today, and it's not a retirement home, but it's becoming increasingly a place for English coaches to make an impact.
Yeah, and this is all to do with the fact that when you drop out of football effectively, that there's been a league football education that's been set up, and they're sending players to Sweden. So, you know, if you don't make it at AFC Wimbledon or York or somewhere like that, you know, you don't just drop into Saturday football, if you like, and the non-leagues, they are offering another pathway. Of course, Östersunds became famous for their performances against Arsenal under Graham Potter. They've got a couple of British players as well. But it seems like it's just going throughout Sweden. And I suppose there's a couple of reasons for it. One will be the old connection, Bob Houghton and also
Roy
Hodgson, yeah. Of course. And you was mentioned this, that their football kind of lends itself to English-type players or British-type players. Sorry.
It mirrors, and with all due respect to Sweden, of course, they're in the World Cup and put out Italy. Let's not forget that. It mirrors English football, I think, sort of 20 years ago, in that they big, strong players playing very stern, often 4-4-2. And, you know, well done to everybody. I mean, any English player or coach goes abroad always has my admiration. And well done the Swedes. If they can see a way to improve their local football, it's fantastic. We're replacing Bentner watch now because we're tired of him with Zlatan watch.
Well, of course, this links into Sweden. Could he possibly play at the World Cup?
They should ask him, judging by what he did in the last few days.
Well, I mean, I think that would upset the balance of the team if you just recalled him. But what a goal he scored. I mean, he scored 2 goals on his debut for LA Galaxy in the derby against new franchise Los Angeles. His first one, if you haven't seen it, go online. 35 yards, maybe even a little bit more. Ball bounced up. And Ibrahimovic is one of the few players capable of scoring this type of goal because the ball bounced up waist high.
And he does his kung fu thing, doesn't he?
Kung fu kick over the goalkeeper. And he wasn't even satisfied with that. He still managed to then score the winning goal. And an assist from Ashley Cole as well.
OK, well, thank you very much indeed. That's all the other leagues. Next up, it's Q&A with Mark Landon. This has been Zlatan Watch.
Trust me, if I want to kick somebody head, I know how to kick somebody in the head.
And I said, listen, I've travelled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Continuing to celebrate Baltica Kaliningrad's 24-hour round trip to play Luk Vladivostok in the second level of Russian football. Johnny Cash calls it, I've been everywhere, man.
I'm a killer, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man.
With the exception of Jamiroquai, this has been my favourite ever group of tunes. Thank you for choosing them. Thank you for listening to us on a bank holiday. We love you for that. Okay, it's time for the Trans-Europe Express Q&A, where Mark Langdon will answer all of your questions. I understand why you're not phoning in for this one at the moment, because, of course, you're probably drunk as a skunk on the bank holiday. But plenty of people have tweeted in some very interesting questions. We'll try and get through as many as we can in the next 6 minutes. Of Trans-Europe Express. Mark, first of all, Woz Hay has tweeted in, what's Mark's views on Kaiserslautern's fall from grace? Of course, big, big club and bottom now of Bundesliga 2.
Yes, I think they were always punching well above their weight when they actually won the Bundesliga as a newly promoted side. They're actually, you're right to say they're a big club. It's actually from quite a small town. So maybe we shouldn't really have expected them to continue with those heights of, you know, fighting for titles and you know, European football and stuff like that. But the big problem for them is a financial crisis, and that has seen them sink and you know, could sink even further. We've seen 1860 Munich go down to that level, so it can happen. Kaiserslautern were one of the grounds that got given 2006 World Cup matches. Fantastic. You think what a wonderful kind of position to host these games. They increased the attendance to host these World Cup
capacity,
games.
Yeah.
And it was fine. They could pay the rent on it as long as they remained a Bundesliga club. They didn't remain a Bundesliga club, and so that became a big problem for them in terms of finances. They've now got into a situation where they've sold off their youth academy, which... You understand why they've done it, for short-term gains, but it's a big part of how you can actually come back if you can get that right. It's very expensive to do. So that is why Kaiserslautern are where they are. Poor mismanagement on and off the pitch.
Thank you very much. We'll remain in Germany. Mike has tweeted in, are there rumours of David Wagner going back to Dortmund? Do they carry any weight with you?
I haven't actually seen those rumours.
I started them.
Okay, well, I think as far as Wagner goes, his reputation definitely picked up when he took Huddersfield into the Premier League. And there was talk of Bayer Leverkusen at the time, and that they went down a different route. There hasn't been that many suggestions in Germany of him going to Dortmund. Maybe there's more in England because he's apparently negotiating a new contract with Huddersfield.
I think Huddersfield might still get relegated, but I don't think in this country anyone underestimates how brilliantly he's done with them.
Jurgen Klopp got relegated with Mainz, and it would matter even less in Germany if he got relegated. They would fully respect the job he's done at Huddersfield.
Hello, Peter Stoger, etc.
Yeah. I'm not sure Dortmund know where they're going yet in terms of their new coach. So I wouldn't sort of hold out too much, I'd say, hope. I'm assuming maybe he's a Huddersfield fan, so he's hoping he doesn't go to Dortmund. I've not seen in Germany this kind of strong link.
Mark Kelly has tweeted in, how long can Ajax keep toying with their fans' emotions? I think he's referring to the fact that the club is no longer the dominant force in Holland, and says, never mind hanging on to their best players. What's happened to Dahlberg?
Dahlberg's been injured. I mean, what a fall from grace for Dahlberg. This time last year, he was being spoken about as one of the best, if not the biggest, young talent in European football. Rumours of him going to Roma. just about every...
Roma rumours?
Well, yeah, I mean, and of course, under Monchi, the absolute stargazer, he knows all the best talent. Dolberg was absolutely useless in the Europa League final. Ajax were.
To be
Ajax
fair, yeah.
Were, but
yeah.
His runs, a lot of people were watching him closely. He was hiding from the ball, it felt like at times. At that point, there was a big kind of question mark against him there. Didn't get the move to Roma. Then he got injured, and he's really struggled when he has played this season. It just goes to show that, you know, maybe you have to move when the opportunity is there, because he could have been a Roma player now. I'm not sure if he leaves Ajax anytime soon at the moment.
Ben, the Spurs fan, has texted in, finally, how good is Jonathan Tah? Could he be a potential replacement for Toby Alderweireld?
Yes, he could. I'm not sure I'd want him next to Sanchez at this stage, because they are quite similar and they rely on their pace to get them out of trouble. Positioning, not 100% perfect, but Tari is somebody that I think everybody in Germany expects to eventually...
Big boy as well,
isn't he? He's very powerful, and you know, he's just expected to become a German national team regular, and he would fit the profile of the kind of player that Tottenham are looking to buy, really.
Mark, thank you very much indeed. And every week between now and the end of the season, we'll be having our Q&A session with whoever my wingman is on the programme, and you'll get used to it, and you'll begin to phone in as well, and all the rest of that. Mark, I have to say, thank you very, very much for the last 3 hours, because you say you're getting better, but to me, you look like a man who's a bit sickly, and you've done really well, so thank you very much.
Thank you. I should apologise to the listeners if it's been a horrible listen with me sort of snuffling through.
No, it won't be that, because of what you say is people are so keen to hear what you've had to say. And what does the week hold for you? Which of these European games are you fixating on?
I mean, it's actually the English game. I think Liverpool, Man City. Usually I would look to swerve that, but Liverpool, Man City will be brilliant. Also looking forward to Real Madrid's trip to Juventus.
Okay, and now you've finished your book. That's why you've got ill, because you've had a chance to be ill.
Yeah, absolutely. I have actually. The last couple of days have been horrendous, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Dee, for that. Now, we've been running our poll as well. Having seen that rack of matches in the international arena, who is now your favourite to win the upcoming World Cup? Just 19% go for Brazil, so that's a massive sea change. 24% go for England, which if you think that's 5% more than go for Brazil, that's why you never see a bookmaker on a bicycle. Spain, after their fantastic victory over Argentina, 26% of you, but a very close poll, nearly 9,000 votes. Thank you for those. Germany, always Germany, isn't it? Have got 31% of the vote. Thank you all for listening.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, Danny Kelly's Trans-Europe Express on Talk Sport.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.